Hi, and welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, to exclusive interviews with leading industry experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes. I'm your host, Caitlin Bader. Today, I'm joined by Raj Chovatiya, MD, PhD, and Assistant Professor of Dermatology and Director of the Center for Eczema and Itch at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. He discusses the changing field of atopic dermatitis diagnoses and treatment steps. He also shares what he believes is important about JAK inhibitors and what to look forward to with new treatment options for patients with atopic dermatitis.
Hi there. My name is Dr. Raj Chovatiya. I'm Assistant Professor of Dermatology and Director of the Center for Eczema and Itch at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you for taking time to speak with me. Today, we're going to be talking about atopic dermatitis, including current standards in the practice and things you are looking forward to in the future of atopic dermatitis treatment. Beginning with that, have you seen an increase in atopic dermatitis in the past 1 to 2 years, including patterns, severity, or in pediatric patients?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think that sometimes it helps to zoom out a bit before we zoom in. And if you think about sort of the past several decades, you know, most data would show you that probably there seems to be an increasing incidence and prevalence of atopic dermatitis. And now that question is, are we just doing a better job of catching it and detecting it? And that's where these numbers are coming from. Is it actually a true increase? I think that probably, at least if we're talking about sort of the more longer term data, definitely we know that there's just been sort of increasing amounts of the condition itself, maybe independent of detection. But in recent years, kind of in the time scale you're talking about, there's been just so much, you know, news and press and patient-facing literature and provider-facing literature about the condition itself that I think we're just starting to see a lot more diagnosis because people are realizing that they have eczema, they have atopic dermatitis, and coming to see their providers, and it's getting diagnosed much better, which is good because these people are actually finding and seeking medical care in that sense. The hard part about that, though, is making sure that we can get everybody on the same level of knowledge in terms of making that diagnosis, figuring out treatments and the best long-term strategies to really kind of control and hopefully reduce both incidence and prevalence of the disease in the long run.
Great. And, you know, speaking of, you just mentioned diagnosis, what is the current standard for care and for treatment practices for atopic dermatitis?
Yeah, so, you know, atopic dermatitis is a clinically diagnosed condition, meaning that there isn't a single blood test or a biopsy they're going to use, but there's usually a series of major and minor criteria that one are following through. The gold standard is this diagnostic criteria called the Hanifin and Rika criteria. There's a variety of criteria that different, you know, associations have put forth based on that. The American Academy of Dermatology sort of has a set as well. And then there's a lot of sort of shorter, more technical criteria that are oftentimes used in studies. The UK Working Party criteria is one of those common ones as well. Bottom line, with most of these criteria, once you make the diagnosis of atopic dermatitis, the next thing you're going to try to do is gauge disease severity, right? And think about, is this somebody have, you know, relatively clear disease, mild disease, moderate disease, or severe disease? And the reason why that's important is because it informs the treatment that you're going to actually embark on in terms of helping to control the eczema. And so usually when we think about our treatment algorithm, it's stepwise and additive. And there's slight subtleties in terms of what one association and what country recommends versus another. But bottom line, for most people that are pretty clear, even almost clear, usually you're thinking about foundational skincare. This includes optimized moisturization, optimized bathing, and really good avoidance of known triggers for your atopic dermatitis. The next step for people with sort of milder or mild to moderate disease is really thinking about topical anti-inflammatory therapy, usually applied in a reactive manner. You see a new patch of eczema, you treat it, and then it goes away. And so those kinds of therapies include very classically topical corticosteroids, also topical calcineurin inhibitors like tacrolimus, topical PDE4 inhibitors is one on the market right now, crisaboral, and then sort of a newer topical medication, ruxolitinib cream, which is a topical JAK inhibitor. With the topical medications, you know, when people are not really necessarily optimized with reactive treatment, sometimes we think about more proactive treatment, basically treating areas of the skin that might seem clear but are really prone to eczema flares. And then you start transitioning to more moderate and severe disease, where you think about more whole body treatments, systemic treatments. Essentially, rather than working just from the outside in, you're kind of working from the inside out. And oftentimes you're combining lupus with many of the lower step therapies. So therapies that are advanced in this situation include very classically phototherapy, oftentimes narrowband UVB, but then more commonly these days, there's biologic therapy, there's more classic oral immunosuppressive therapy, and then there's oral JAK inhibition therapy, which is sort of more recent trend and phenomenon in the field. Finally, for people that are truly acutely very severe, sometimes you may even think about acute inpatient hospitalization for wet wrap therapy as well.
So you mentioned JAK inhibitors, and I know that's been a really hot topic at conferences, dermatology speeches. So what is exciting or upcoming about JAK inhibitors to you?
So, you know, I think that the best way to think about this is for years, our treatment options for people with the highest burden of disease were quite limited because the types of treatments we'd have to go through would be things like methotrexate, cyclosporin, even in some cases, even though not recommended, systemic corticosteroids. And most of these are broad global immunosuppressants, meaning that while there is data to suggest that they are helpful, largely it's like taking a mixed approach where you are hitting some stuff on target, but some stuff off target as well. A lot of lab monitoring required, a lot of concern for long-term use related to infection and other sort of comorbid risks as well. And so we were really sorely in need of targeted treatment options. And so sort of one of the big changes that the field saw several years ago was the approval of the first biologic therapy for atopic dermatitis. And now we have a couple on the market and more to come. But even then, for people that, you know, are getting treated, not everyone necessarily is an optimal responder. Not everyone wants injectable therapy. Sometimes people have adverse outcomes to those kinds of treatments. And so this is kind of where we enter the JAK inhibitors as a treatment option for patients. As of now in the US, there's three approved JAK inhibitor therapies for atopic dermatitis. There's one topical and two oral. And so the one topical, which is ruxolitinib 1.5% cream, is for mild to moderate atopic dermatitis involving 3 to 20% of the body surface area. And then in terms of the oral options, these are for moderate to severe disease. This would be upadacitinib 15 and 30 milligrams, and then abrocitinib 100 and 200 milligrams. In general, with the oral medications, the way the indication statement is written, they are intended for people who have had one type of systemic medication previously with an inadequate response. This could be any other systemic medication, whether it be biologic, oral immunosuppressive, steroid, anything like that. I think the really big takeaways of the JAK inhibitor class is that high potency in terms of very efficacious, they work very, very quickly, and they are really good in particular, not only at targeting lesions, but targeting itch. The other side of that coin is that all of the JAK inhibitors in this country have what's called a boxed warning or high-level safety information that's kind of on the outside of the label. A lot of this comes from a long-term oral surveillance study looking at tofacitinib, which is sort of one of the oldest JAK inhibitors in rheumatoid arthritis patients who were over the age of 50 who had certain risk factors. And it was really designed to take a look, was there any stuff happening we didn't want to? Bottom line, with that disease state, those patients, there was an increased risk of certain types of blood clots and certain types of heart events and whatnot. So this is kind of what's found its way on every single label, no matter the indication. So this has been one challenge recently with JAK inhibition in terms of trying to select the right patients for these therapies. And sort of if you ask me, I think that there's a lot of patients that are really in need of these therapies, and the very promising safety data in atopic dermatitis, along with efficacy, probably outweighs some of those concerns in my mind. This isn't really the end of the story, but we're actually continuing to see even more innovation here. And I would expect even sort of newer entrants coming down the line over the next several years.
So, you know, thinking about, you just mentioned innovation and what's coming up in the next couple of years, what are you looking forward to regarding treatments for atopic dermatitis, and where would you like to see things go?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that we could talk for another 30 minutes or an hour on everything that's exciting in that pipeline. There's hundreds of things being studied in phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 trials, but I'll limit it to a category that doesn't necessarily get the attention that it probably should. Let's talk about topical therapy for a second, right? Because a lot of the revolution we've been seeing is biologic injectable therapy, oral systemic therapy, really for people with moderate to severe disease. But when you think about it, most people with atopic dermatitis probably fall into this mild to moderate bucket, where people, you know, would find that topical therapy actually is very reasonable for them. And for years, topical steroids have kind of been the mainstay, right? But we know that there's issues with topical steroids. Sometimes you can't really use the right agent or the right body location based on potency. The vehicles can be very unappetizing and unpleasant, leaving people feeling greasy and messy. Adherence to current topical therapies is low. There's, you know, reasons that people can have adverse events on topical corticosteroids, thinning of the skin, pigmentary changes, and then things like that. And so there's two new medications on the horizon that I think are going to sort of answer some of that stuff. We've already recently seen topical ruxolitinib 1.5% cream as sort of a new non-steroidal topical. The two more that are kind of headed our way, one of which is going to be topical roflumilast, which is being studied as both a cream and a foam. And this is a novel PDE4 inhibitor. And so many people thought the story on PDE4 inhibition was kind of written with crisaborole, which showed, you know, low levels of efficacy combined with a lot of cutaneous sensation issues with application, stinging, burning, and pain. Well, roflumilast is sort of an even more selective PDE4 inhibitor that binds with higher potency. The vehicle is sort of very novelly designed and very pleasant, doesn't really seem to be associated with stinging and burning, and actually seems to be quite efficacious. Another medication in this category that's being studied was actually just recently approved for psoriasis and is currently in trials for atopic dermatitis, is tapinarof cream. Again, a totally new mechanism of action. This one looking at the aryl hydrocarbon receptor, that's kind of an important part of the body's own homeostatic and xenobiotic response mechanism. It seems to be quite efficacious for psoriasis, and it looks to be very similarly efficacious for atopic dermatitis trials as well, with a pretty good safety profile, much like roflumilast. I think in terms of big, broad trends that we really want to see, there's such a big treatment burden on our patients with atopic dermatitis, and people oftentimes feel they have to do something every day, multiple times a day. They have to do stuff weeks in a row. They have to do things that are not necessarily pleasant, annoying, interfere with their life. And so we're all kind of hoping with many of these therapies, we're going to have a better idea of how to help subset our patients where we can actually be pursuing remission, meaning that maybe not necessarily a cure and the condition is gone, but perhaps we can actually reduce or infrequently dose or take even bigger breaks from medication and still keep people under really good control.
For more Dermatology Times content, from articles and videos to podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com.